from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. Welcome to 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon, and this is episode 64. 64, 30 Laps with Dick. That must be some sort of a milestone. Well, it's one more than 63, I guess. Yeah, says it all, really. But I hadn't been out till 3:45 in the song for some time now, apart from when I lose my keys on a Saturday night. And the fact is, I'm not yet 64. But hey, we'll concentrate on this week's episode. It's a much safer bet on 30 laps. And this week, we'll look at the Wheels Car of the Year for 1973, the sensational Leyland P76. The Leyland, well, this Leyland, has no brothers. It stood alone, very alone as it turns out, in a field all of its own. A new V8 in an oil crisis. Great timing. All this and more in 30 laps. And we're holding out over the last two stories of the DeLorean that we missed it last week, because we did a whole episode on DeLorean and it's time to give Mr. DeLorean and the DMC a rest. So we will. Instead, we'll talk about the British Motor Corporation, the Leyland P76-73 Wheels Car of the Year. And if we've got time, that old saying, here at 30 Laps, the best-selling car in every country. Well, the major countries. Well, some of the major countries. Anyway, let's get started.
I get older, losing my hair, many years from now. Will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 3:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me, will you still feed me, when I'm 64?
Well, talking about all things British Leyland, you couldn't get much more British than the four boys from Liverpool. So let's start with the British Motor Corporation. Now, I tried to find a truncated history, not the sort that tells you what the directors had for breakfast in 1962. And the best one I could find was from Wikipedia. So this is where we talk about the British Motor Corporation, with the compliments of Wikipedia. The British Motor Corporation Limited, BMC, was a UK-based vehicle manufacturer formed in the early 1952 to give effect to the agreed merger of Morris and Austin businesses. BMC acquired the shares of Morris Motors and the Austin Motor Company, Morris Motors, the holding company of the productive business of the Nuffield organisation. They owned MG, Riley and Wolseley. In September 65, BMC took control of its major supplier of bodies, pressed steel, acquiring Jaguar's body supplier in the process. In September 66, BMC merged with Jaguar Cars, and in December 66, BMC changed its name to the British Motor Holdings Company Limited. BMH merged in May 68 with Leyland Motor Corporation Limited, which made trucks and buses, and owned Standard Triumph International Limited, BMH becoming the major part of British Leyland Motor Corporation. BMC was the largest British car company of its day, when, in 1952, 39% of British output, producing a wide range of cars under brand names including Austin, Morris, MG, Austin Healey, Riley and Wolseley, as well as commercial vehicles and agricultural tractors. The first chairman, Lord Nuffield, from William Morris Limited, but he was replaced at the end of 52 by Austin's Leonard Lord, who continued in that role until his 65th birthday in 1961, handing over, in theory at least, the managing director responsibilities to his deputy, George Harriman, in 1956. BMC's headquarters were at the Austin Longbridge plant near Birmingham, and Austin was the dominant partner in the group, mainly because of the chairman. The use of Morris engine designs was dropped within 3 years, and all new car designs were coded ADO from Amalgamated Drawing Office. The Longbridge plant was up to date, having been thoroughly modernised in 1951, and compared very favourably with Nuffield's 16 different and often old-fashioned factories scattered over the Midlands. Austin's management systems, however, especially cost control and marketing, were not as good as Nuffield's. And as the market changed from a shortage of cars to competition, this was to tell. The biggest selling car, the Mini, was famously analysed by the Ford Motor Company, which concluded that BMC must have been losing 30 quid on every one sold. The result was that although volumes held up well throughout the BMC era, market share fell, as did profitability and hence investment in new models, triggering the 1966 merger with Jaguar Cars to form British Motor Holdings, and the government-sponsored merger of BMH with Lane and Motor Corporation in 1968. At the time of the mergers, a well-established dealership network was in place for each of the marques. Among the car-buying British public was a tendency to loyalty to a particular marque, and marques appealed to different market segments. This meant that the marques competed against each other in some areas, though some marques had a larger range than others. The Riley and Wolseley models were selling in very small numbers. Styling was also getting distinctly old-fashioned, and this caused Leo Lord, in an unusual move for him, to call upon the services of an external stylist. In the 1950s and 60s, BMC set up 21 plants overseas, some as subsidiaries, others as joint ventures, to assemble its vehicles. One was British Motors Corporation Australia, which was established in 1953 at the Nuffield Australia site on the one-time Victoria Park racecourse in Sydney. This facility went from a marshalling area for fully imported Morris cars — Austin's were up until then being reassembled in Melbourne from an earlier Austin Morris establishment — to a facility for making crated cars, to the total local fabrication and construction of cars, engines and mechanicals. So Denmark was probably a strong market for BMC in Europe in the post-war period. The Danish government closely regulated exports and imports to maintain the country's balance of trade. High-value imports such as cars were heavily taxed. Britain brought large amounts of agricultural and meat produce from Denmark, and in response, British cars were subject to a much lower import tax than cars from other countries, making BMC products very popular in the country until the 1970s, when these regulations were relaxed. From 63 to 75, a company was established in Spain to produce BMC cars under licence. The factory was in Pamplona. When the production of Austin and Mini cars was discontinued, SEAT, who is the Spanish-owned company, owned by the state and some banks and industrial investors, purchased the factory. After the takeover of SEAT by Volkswagen, SEAT made an internal resale of the Pamplona company, formerly Authorry, to Volkswagen, which soon started producing the Polo there. When the Wilson Labor government, 64 to 70, came into power at a time when the British manufacturing industry was in decline, and decided that the remedy was to promote some mergers, particularly in the motor industry. Chrysler was already buying into the Roots Group. Leyland had acquired Standard Triumph and would buy Lowa in 1967, and had become a major automotive force. BMC was suffering a dramatic drop in its share of the home market. Tony Benn, appointed Minister of Technology in July 66, brought pressure to bear on the industry. In mid-65, BMC offered to buy its major supplier, Pressed Steel, and took control in September with 27,000 employees. 12 months later, BMC merged with Jaguar Cars, adding a further 7,000 employees. 14 December 66, BMC shareholders approved the change of its name to British Motor Holdings, and it took effect from that date. Some were hoping, of course, in the British companies, it was going to get better. It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school. Unfortunately, not the case this time. In August 1975, BLMC was partly nationalised and renamed British Leyland Limited, and the rest is history. Following the merger, a review of company records was undertaken with the support of the new board. At the time of the merger, 16 versions of the Mini were being produced, yielding an average profit of just £16 per car, while every Morris Minor sold lost the group £9. And every Austin Westminster sold lost 17 quid. This helps to explain why the Westminster and the Minor were among the early casualties in the merger. Because of the higher proportion of auto production costs represented by fixed costs that needed to be allocated over a planned production volume, and the use in the 1960s of investment appraisal criteria that were ill-suited to accounting for volume fluctuations and the rapidly changing value of the UK currency in the 1960s, the whole lot started to go south. The new management's diagnosis that BMC's profitability was insufficient to fund support and new model investment to cover its disparate range of brands and models, and that was hard to refute. But let's go back a step, shall we? Back to that Australian company that was set up all those years ago, and their wonderful design, the British Leyland P76. They reckoned a British Leyland at that time, in the early 70s, the P76 would be fixing a hole in the market spot. I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering where it will go. That has a particular irony if you've ever been in a P76 when it's raining, because, well, the rain did get in. But this is 1973, and a little piece from Auto Car Magazine by Richard Bremner. The 1973 P76 offered all things and a trendy wedge-shaped body to go with it. Penned by Leyland Australia's in-house stylist Romand Rodborough, with input from the ubiquitous Giovanni Michelotti. It came with a choice of a 2.6-litre straight six, an enlarged version of the Austin Morris's transverse 2200 motor, or a 4.4 V8 grown from Rover's ex-Buick 3.5-litre engine. It looked a little odd in the nose and tail zones, with enormous overhangs and a boot big enough to house a 44-gallon drum. Just the thing for an industrious day on the sheep farm. It also came with a series of funny paint names that included Hairy Lime, Arm Eye Blue, Peel Me a Grape, Home of the Orange, and Oh Fudge. The entertainment continued on the road because the P76 turned out to handle pretty well, felt robust, and was reckoned by the Aussie press to stack up as well against the opposition. Australia's Wheels magazine made it Car of the Year for 1973. And then it all went to pieces. Strikes, component shortages, a not quite finished development program, and stories of industrial sabotage all undermined the P76. British Leyland's rivals were reckoned to have pressured suppliers into stalling parts deliveries, fearing the possibility that Leyland Australia might actually have produced a decent car. So, by October 1974, just 16 months after the P-76 was launched, this promising car was killed along with the Sydney plant that made it. As much a victim of the parent company, British Leyland's accelerating domestic troubles, and as it was local difficulties. Around 18,000 P-76 were built and nearly all sold in Australia, although it was evaluated in Europe as well. The car's premature end also killed off the P-76 would-be siblings. These included a not uninteresting coupe, dubbed P-76-47, of which 10 are thought to have existed, a mash-up of Italian, American and British design themes. Even rarer is the P-76 estate, which might have looked perfect while cruising the outback. Just one of these was built. Today, the P-76 is something of a cult following in Australia, with a thriving owners' club. And that's situated in New South Wales, and it meets monthly in the western suburbs of Sydney. A P-76 even triumphed in the classics category at the Peking to Paris Rally in 2013. The 40th anniversary of the car, beating a 1965 Porsche 911 in the process. Australia's days of being a car producer are now behind it. GM, Ford and Toyota having all closed their factories in the country. A victim, among other things, of a strong currency that made exports pricey and imports cheap. The failed P-76 project was just the last sorry chapter in British Leyland's attempts to remain a major player in Australia and a wider multinational. The car remains one of the more interesting might-have-beens that litter the history of Britain's very own might-have-been General Motors. And that was from Auto Car magazine, written in February 2020 by Richard Bremner. I'm Richard Lyon. You're on 30 Laps with Dick. We're all up to our knees in, well, probably up to our waist now in British Motor Corporation, British Leyland, and the wonderful P-76. They're great, these early stereo recordings, aren't they? You get the music, but you can only just hear the vocal. Anyway, it's the Beatles doing what they do best. Let's stick with Auto Car magazine and let's look at the best-selling car in some of the major countries of the world. And this comes from a general editorial to the November 2018 edition, something I thought you might be interested in. So let's start with the United States. What do you reckon the best-selling car in the United States is? 1948 to the present, 30 million of them. The Ford F-Series. You've got to hand it to the Ford F-Series. It does nothing by halves, as well as being the best-selling vehicle in the USA for decades. It's also the biggest hitter in the list by a factor of more than two. Ford is justifiably proud of its pickup range, and a new one rolls off the production line every 52 seconds, all year round. The F-Series generates around $41 billion per year alone in revenue for Ford. Truck sales in America are closely correlated to the housing and construction markets. Since 1948, when the F-Series was launched, the country's population has increased from 147 million to 326 million, and they all need somewhere to live and to work. F-Series vehicles sold in North America are built in factories in Michigan, Kentucky, Ohio and Missouri. Never to be outdone, the Russians. Their most popular car, 15 million, was the Lada Riva from 1980 to 2015. The Lada Riva has a convoluted history that starts with the 1966 Fiat 124 and meanders through the VAZ 2101 before it becomes the Lada Riva in 1980. From here, there was no stopping the Lada as it went on to notch up 15 million sales over a 35-year life. Basically, in many ways, it suited many Russian drivers looking for something cheap and easy to maintain, for which could also cope with the extremes of weather experienced in that vast country. Japan, now I reckon if you took a bet on this, the bookmaker would lose. Toyota Corolla, 1966 to present, 12.65 million vehicles. The Japanese can be notoriously fickle when it comes to new cars, and many buyers are drawn to quirky cars, yet it's the simple Toyota Corolla that has ousted all others in the land of its designers, which helps hugely. Here is a production heritage stretching back to 1966. That means many of its rivals for short-term sales never got a look in. How about the Germans? Well, of course, it's the Volkswagen, and probably also, of course, part two, it's the Volkswagen Golf. Come on, what did you expect? This is Germany, after all, and the Volkswagen Golf. No other car escapulates. I haven't got it wrong there, but never mind, I'll try again. A national identity in quite the same way. So it's obvious the German nation would open its hearts and wallets to the Golf. Even so, the 7 million and counting sold in its homeland is still only a small proportion of the 34 million Golfs sold worldwide. Yes, folks, since 1974, they've sold 7 million. Kind of encapsulates it, doesn't it? Hey? See, I got it eventually. What about the Czech Republic? Well, again, like the Volkswagen in Germany, the Skoda is the go-to car in the Czech Republic. The Octavia, 1996 to the present day, 6.4 million. The patriotic Czechs have elevated, I'm having fun this afternoon, have elevated the Octavia to a very solid number. And that number is number one in the country's overall sales marketing, with 6.4, finding happy homes since the model's launch in 1966. I beg your pardon, 96. In the intervening years, the Octavia has increased its sales and market share in its own backyard, despite growing sales of immediate rivals and others in the blossoming Czech economy. Let's go to the home of our friends, the Beatles, who've been happily providing the soundtrack this afternoon. In the United Kingdom, Ford Fiesta, 4.5 million. British drivers have become used to the Fiesta topping the country's sales charts in recent years, but it used to be the larger blue oval models that took that honour. So only in 2014 did the Fiesta steal the UK's best-selling overall title from the Escort, which itself took the honour from the original Mini, sold between 1959 and 2000. Produced in at least in part in Britain till 2002, today nearly all Fiestas sold in Europe are made in Cologne in Germany.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer.
No, we're going back to cars that are sold all over the world. So feast your ears on this and stop dreaming with the lads. How about Canada, hey? Well, same as the United States, actually, the F-Series. Ford F-Series, 4.2 million of them. While there may be many distinguishing features between the Canadians and their US neighbours, they both share a love of the Ford F-Series. It's been the best-selling vehicle in Canada for decades, thanks to the ideally suited rough terrain that covers much of the country. It's also cheaper than many other saloons and available in a range of body styles and engine sizes. If we go to Italy, it's the Fiat Uno. 4 million of them since 1983. Fiat turned out more than 6 million Unos during the car's production lifetime, which ended in 1994, and around two-thirds were destined for domestic consumption. As a new take on the theme of the 500 and 26 as affordable compact transport, the Uno was high on was nigh on perfect. The only real surprise, it managed this sales achievement in a relatively short 11-year span. What about the great subcontinent, hey? Well, it was the Hindustan Ambassador in 1958 to 2014, 4 million. When the Morris Oxford had served its purpose in Britain, it found a whole new lease of life in India as the Hindustan Ambassador from 1958. It served dutifully as transport for the middle classes and a ubiquitous taxi right up until its production ended in 2014. There are still hundreds of thousands of Indian roads, thanks to a simple design. Hundreds of thousands on Indian roads. I think that's a type error, but it's not my fault this time. Typing error. Simple design and its tough mechanicals. Australia, the Ford Falcon. Surprise, surprise. 1960 to 2016, 3 million plus. The legendary Ford Falcon started life being built in Melbourne as an Aussie-fied version of the American model of the same name. The key difference was the right-hand drive, but by 1970, when Ford US ceased its production, the Australian model gained more local design. The result is a car buyer's look took it to heart, particularly when it was fitted with powerful V8s and entered domestic motor racing. After seven generations, however, the Falcon line came to an end in 2016 due to the rising costs of production. Then General Motors closed its Australian car factory in 2017, bringing to an end volume car production in this country. And we might carry on with that another time. We haven't been to China yet, or Mexico, Malaysia, South Africa, Spain, Romania, Qatar, yeah, Ireland, Turkey. We've got a few to go yet. So maybe we'll finish that off in another episode. And talking about General Motors, which we weren't really, but we are now. Next week's episode will be a bit of a story about General Motors. We'll give them half an hour because they're gone. So, well, they're going. So we'll talk about their history. Talk about gone and going. That's probably me too with my mispronunciation this week. A bit more than usual, but never mind. Hey, if it wasn't there, you'd miss it. I'd like to thank you for your company today. The show was written and produced in the studios of 2RPH in Sydney, Richard Lyon, 30 Laps with Dick, and I look forward to talking to you next week all about the Holden, the rise and the fall. Until then, bye for now.